Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf lamed tet. Can you imagine? Oof, we're really making a lot of headway over here. So, all right, what we said yesterday was that according to Abaye, when it says in the pasuk v'natan la'avi ha'na'ara, which is rather obvious, who else would he be giving it to? We could just say la'aviha. Why does it have to stress la'aviha na'ara? So what we said, according to Abaye, was that this tells us that if the na'ara had died in the interim, that there is no din of kenas. V'lo la'aviha ameta. Today, we're up to three lines from the bottom. And we see that Rava has a completely different take on this. And this thing that Abaye takes for granted, and he says that definitely if she dies, that there's no din bichlal of tashlum in l'knas, is against what Rava says. Now listen, guys, that usually what this means is that when it comes to Rava, he's asking whether what Abaye said is true. And that is the case. However, it's not the case yet. That will be the case at the end of the sugya when we have a different lashon in Rava, in which Rava will question whether what Abaye said is correct. However, the first step that we're taking now is a 100% rejection by Rava of Abaye, and therefore it doesn't really follow directly from the words that say that Rava wasn't quite sure. He's quite sure. There's no such thing as saying that there's no din of tashlumei knas after her death. The question that was raised was this: Yesh beger bekever o ein beger bekever? Gavi dear, beger bekever. Please write down on the list. Beger bekever. So what is the question about yesh beger bekever or not? So the shaila is like this. Rav is saying definitely the halacha would be that if she died, there's still knas. The question is, if she dies, who gets the knas? At a time where, had she been alive, she would already have been a bogeret. That's the issue. So if she would have been a bogeret by the time that the court assigns the chiyuv, so then if you hold yesh beger bekever, then so to speak, she has grown up in the grave. Fine. So if that's the case, her heirs are the one that will collect the money. If you hold ein beger bekever, so then the din would be that she remains permanently a nara, so to speak. In which case, she would be in a situation of paying to the father, which of course is against Abaye completely. There's a little bit of a side problem here, which is that in reality, as we'll see later, a knas is not paid out to heirs. There's no din of Yerusha on a knas. And therefore, the question that the Gemara is raising now about whether, if she has grown up, then the knas would accrue to her and to her heirs is not really true, because there's no din of Yerusha on a knas. It's a different problem. So, I mean, the truth is that there are many Rishonim who address this. According to the Tosfos over here, when we're saying the din of the knas, we mean the dinim that are linked to the knas, which includes the tashlumim of Boshes and Pagam. So keep that in mind. But in any event, the question as it stands is clearly against Abaye. So if you hold yesh beger bekever, then it goes to her heirs, the benon havim, assuming that she has a child. Odilma ein beger bekever, or if she never grows up after she died, so to speak, so then it still goes to the father, because he's always considered to be the aviha nara, and he doesn't darshan aviha nara velo avi hameta. Hold on a second. How did she have a child? I'm so confused. You're saying she has a child at the time that she's still a nara? How did she have a child at the time that she's a nara? Last I heard, it takes some time to have a child. And that time, usually 9 months, would mean that she had to have gotten pregnant when she was a ketana. But you can't get pregnant as a ketana, according to the Gemara, and survive, Because remember, we said before, we've had this many times, that we have three women that use contraceptives that, this was a machlokas, remember, whether must use contraceptives or can use contraceptives was the question about whether you're allowed to rely on Shomer P'sonash. And we discussed this at length, you know, the question of Mila on a bright day or smoking, things like that. Anyway, so a child, a ketana, if she's less than 12 years old, so must use contraceptives or can. A me'uberet, if she's pregnant, also. If she's nursing, also. What's the reason for these cases? Well, if she's so young, we're worried that she might get pregnant and not be able to handle the pregnancy, and therefore she could die. And if she's pregnant, then we're worried that she'll get pregnant again. And that way, if another child, another fetus grows at the same time, which does once in a while happen, although it usually makes Time magazine when it does. But anyway, so we're afraid that the second one is going to make the first fetus, is going to damage the first fetus. And if she's nursing, then if she gets pregnant during nursing, it affects the quality and taste of the milk, and therefore she may have to wean her child, and that's considered to be sakonas nefashas, and you have to avoid weaning a child before the time. So shema tigmolet bina. And how do we define in this din, how do we define a child that's a ketana, that we have to worry about using contraceptives, from the age of 11 years old until 12 years old, right? But if she's less than 11 years old, you don't have to worry about providing her with contraceptives because she doesn't get pregnant at such a young age. And if she's more than 12 years old, then she doesn't die if she gets pregnant. She can handle a pregnancy. But this din that you're mechuyev to see to it that she has contraceptives, that's only if she is a ketana from 11 to 12. Now, of course, the problem is over here that this, you're assuming that she got pregnant. So less than that, more than that, says Rabbi Meir, the Chachamim say, look, you never really have to worry about contraceptives. I mean, the pregnancy is a random event, so to speak. And therefore, it's not in your hands. It's in the hands of the Lord. And you have a right to say, you know, okay, so I'm stupid. Shomer P'sayim Hashem, God saves the simple. And you want to take chances on your life, you might even survive. Look at, there are actually people out there that put these sticks of cancer in their mouth and they inhale them and everything. And I don't know, some of them live. So Mamela, the Shomer P'sayim Hashem, you know, maybe you'll live too. As I say, that's not true, because you're no longer a Dash Bei Rabin. People are not really unaware of the issues here. So could be that it's, according to many poskim, it's us or mamash to smoke. Anyway, but the problem that I have is that how did she get pregnant in time to have a child so that she was still a Nahara? Because your whole question is based on, do we give it to her child? What child? How did she have a child? So now maybe you'll tell me that she had a child because she got pregnant on the first day that she was a Nahara. And then 6 months later, she had a child. But the problem is that the minimum time for pregnancy that yields a actual viable child is 6 months and a day. But the whole period of Naharut is precisely 6 months, and there's not enough time to have a child. So what is Rava's question? Do I give the money to the child? What child? There won't be a child. So maybe you'll tell me, maybe she got pregnant the first day of her Naharut. Impossible. Beshita Yarche Mika Yolda, she needs at least one day more than that to have a viable fetus. V'amar Shmuel, Ein Bein Naharut U'Bagrut Ela Shisha Chodashim. There's a total of 6 months precisely. Now maybe you'll tell me, that doesn't mean precisely. It means there's no less than 6 months, but there could be more. So v'chitema botzir hudaleka tveika, there could be more. It says Ella. Ella means that's the amount, okay? Okay, so then what was the question? Can you restate your question? Because there ain't no child to give it to. So what do you mean, yesh pega bekever, and we'll give it to the kever? I mean, to the child? Elahachi kami bailin. Yesh beger bekever. My question is she considered to be a grown-up? And if she's a grown-up, then the father won't get it. Upaka up. Bye-bye, daddy. So that he won't have to pay back the knas. Odilma ein beger bekever velo paka av. That's the question. So this, of course, is 100% against Abaye, because Abaye says if she has died, then there's no din of Nesina to the Av whatsoever. So this part is not what we were referring to before when we said Milta, the Pshita Leil Abaye, is actually Miboye Leil Rava. That's not true. Okay, here is the part that may be the correct way that Rava asked the question, and that's what we were referring to earlier when we said Mil to the Pshitole. And that is the way that Mar Bar Rav Ashi phrased it. Mar Bar Rav Ashi, he raised the question of Rava in a different way. And he was Boilei Hochi. Mita osa bagrut o ein osa bagrut. The question over here is death the equivalent of bagrut? Meaning, that there will be no koach of the av to be yoresh, which is basically what Abaye said. I learned out from the pasuk, in which Rava disagrees. I don't learn out from the pasuk that the father cannot be the father of a corpse. And what we therefore need to know is he the father of a bogeret? If she had grown up in between the psak, the event, and the psak and the bezdin, it wouldn't have been given to the father. So too, since she grew up, so to speak, in terms of the years from her birth, she would, if she were alive, she would now be a bogeret. So maybe it doesn't go to the father. That's the question, whether it was mafkia, the koyach of the av, or not. And that's how he raised the issue. Take her. Boimine Rava mi Abaye. So now this ends that question. The question that Rava raised to Abaye is like this. What would be the din of her actually going ahead and accepting kedushin from someone before we paskin the chiyev on the ma'anes? So now the rapist, who does he pay? Is there still a chiyev to pay? Because we said before, nara asher lo me'urasa, right? And you're questioning whether the Nara is still called a Nara. But is she called a Nara asher lo orasa if she went ahead and now currently is orasa? So how do we deal with that? Does this change her position in terms of the chiyev of payment or not? That's the question. On my lay, so Abaye said to Rava, I don't understand. It doesn't say, v'natan le'avi ha-Nara asher lo arusa. It doesn't say that. It says ki yimtza ish nara betula asher lo arasa. Then once that takes place, v'natan lavi anara, but he doesn't have to be the father of a woman who is not an arusa at the time. So I don't even understand your question. Of course, it makes no difference. Says Rava. Well, according to that, would you say the same thing in the event that she went ahead and actually got married? Suppose Baalea. And she goes ahead and she goes and marries. So now the din is, as it says in the Braita, for the Tanya Baalav, and he say the knas goes to her. Why does it go to her? Does it say in the Pasuk Vinatan Leviya Nara Shalonisua? So why doesn't he have to pay the Leviya Nara? I don't understand. Well, obviously it has nothing to do with it, Ari Ashna. In the case where she actually get married over there, it's nothing to do with a pasuk. It's simply, look, if she's a bogeret, she leaves the rishus of the father. And if she's married benisuin, she leaves the rishus of the father, correct? So therefore, it simply makes sense in terms of the way I understand the interrelationship between herself and her father, benogea, all of these varied halachas. So since ma bagrut ba'ale o bagrala atzma, is it not true that she would get her own knas in the event that she grows up in the interim? Yes. So then the same thing is true af nisuin, the same way that nisuin takes her out of the rishus of the father. So therefore, Baal Avenisait, if this guy rapes her and then she goes ahead and gets married, it should be the same thing that it should go la'atzma. Our whole discussion was only about an arusa. That's why it had to do with the pasuk. Because an arusa does not take her completely out of her father's rishus. Vaharaya, we still need the father, even when there is a husband that gave her erisin but not nesuin, we still need to involve the father in hataras nedarim. And her so-called husband, her orus, cannot be made for nedarim on his own. So therefore, erisin mikam afkim rishut da'av lagamri, that did not take her out of her father's rishus. Because remember what the Mishnah says in Nedarim? Na'ara hama'urasa, in the event that she is a mu'ureset, you need both of the a'uba'ala, or mefir la nedareha, and therefore, in that case, it's dependent on what you're going to be medayik in the pasuk. That's why this has nothing to do. What are you telling me? This is the equivalent of an arusa. It's not the equivalent of an arusa. An arusa, in fact, is still in the rishus of the father, partially. And now we are ready for our hidden kapitan. Maybe now he'll be kind enough to take us outside and share his view. Some people just want to keep everything to themselves. Lovely. Hamefate noten shlosha dvarim ve'ones arba'a. So it turns out that there are four separate tashlumin when it comes to seduction. Three that comes to seduction, and four when it comes to rape. So what are these things that are different? The ones gives arba'a. Well, a mefate gives boshet, pegam, and knas, because these are things that even though she's been willing as a partner, but the father is the one who is the mezuka for these things, and therefore you have to pay it. But the rapist has to also pay for pain. And therefore, we're going to talk about what pain we're talking about, but he has to pay for the pain. So let's just take it all in one gulp over here. What are the total differences between the case of the ones and the case of the mefateh? So ma bein ones lemefateh, an ones pays, as we just said, tsar. Mefateh does not pay for tsar. The ones pays his chamishim shekel on the spot. In other words, it's not up to him about whether he's going to be marrying her, because if he marries her, he won't have to pay. It's not true. He's got to pay no matter what. Plus, he's got to marry her. Masha enkein the mefateh, he only pays in the event ima ein avia letitala. So then kesef yishkol kamara betulot. So there only if he refuses to marry her. That's another big difference. A mefateh can only have to pay when he's motzi her. The Gemara is saying motzi her. He had never married her. What do you mean motzi her? We'll talk about that in a minute. Ha'ones, another big difference is that a rapist can continue and must continue to drink in the same stinking pot that he had in the beginning. I don't care what she is. Shote ba'atzitzo. So whether she's, I don't know, maybe she's blind, maybe she's a mukashkin, I don't care. Let him keep her forever. If it was just consensual, so then if he wants to be Megarisher at any time, he can be Megarisher. When we say he shotebat so let him keep drinking from his disgusting pot, what do we mean? I don't care if she's Chigeret, she's Suma, she's a Mukashkin, she can be lame, she can be blind, she can be covered over with disgusting boils. But if she ends up being asura to him because she committed adultery, or maybe she's a mamzeret and ena ruya lavo bi Yisrael. That's something else. Ena rishai lekaima, because it says v'lo tia leisha, isha aruya lo. Telling you these goyim, if they would only just read the Torah properly, Do they really think that a death penalty is going to stop rape? This is a million times worse than death. Keep her. No, anything. Oh, yes. Keep her forever. Boy, that'll end the rapes very quickly. Anyway, so now when we're talking about the difference between paying tsar for the ones and not paying tsar for the mefateh, what exactly are we talking about? Now, Tosafos understands the question to be this. Look, I mean, what kind of question is what kind of pain? Obviously, there's pain if she's a betula in the breaking of her betulin. Everybody knows that that's painful. So why are we asking about what tsar? It's sort of a weird question at this point. So Tosafos says, no, it's not a weird question. Even at this point, we're going to see later justification for the difference. But even at this point, it's not considered to be a weird question because the fact is that at the time, she's too involved in the joys of sex to be feeling pain. She's not noticing the pain. That's the point. So the pain really accrues to her afterwards, and it's not at the time. And the only time that we find pain in terms of the chiyuv is where the pain is immediate at the time of the damage, which the person is attacked. Mashenkin, over here specifically, we have a difference. Therefore, Tosafos understands that the question is pain that's caused after an event could be looked at as a groma bialma. This is not the direct impact, it's the subsequent impact, and that's a groma. Is there a chiyuv of paying over here tsar that would be a groma bialma? There's no chiyuv on tsar that's a groma. Therefore, the Gemara is saying, what is the pain? Omar Avodah Shmuel. The pain is the fact that he threw her down onto the ground before he raped her and he treated her roughly, and that is painful. Come on, man, says Rabbi Zeran, if he had a beautiful sleeping bag and he throws her onto the sleeping bag, so now he's put her. I mean, we're going to have to analyze like how hard the ground was or how nice the sleeping bag was. Next thing you're going to tell me she has to pay him for the high quality sleeping bag. I mean, come on, that's crazy. So, me'ata chavata gabei shiroina chinami de potter. And if you tell me that maybe, yeah, maybe indeed, either there is tsar or there's no tsar. I mean, I don't understand what's so weird about that. Tsar is always a function of the event and how much the person went through. If they didn't go through anything, so then there's no tsar. You're looking at me like I'm crazy. Yeah, there's a difference between a nice, comfortable sleeping bag and throwing her down on an Indian bed of nails. I mean, why not? why wouldn't there be a difference? Oh, no, I'll tell you, because for Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, Omer Mishum Rabbi Shimon, Ones Eino Mishalem Et Hatzar, Shesofali Yitzta'er Tachat Ba'ala. The problem is, and we said over here, that an Ones, according to this Shita of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, he's quoting Rabbi Shimon, that there is no tashlumin for the tsar of an ones. Because there is no tsar. What do you mean? Because whatever tsar she suffers from him, she's ultimately going to have to suffer when she gets married. So he saved her a little bit of later suffering. Okay, so why should he have to pay? Now, I understand her husband is not going to be taking her, throwing her down on the Indian bed of nails, right? Okay, so then that can't be what we're referring to, obviously. So we're not talking about a tsar of chavata. Elo amr Reb Nachman, omer Rabba Bar Avua. What we're talking about is the tsar shapisik haraglaim. Look, is he spreading her legs? Yes. That's before he enters her. That's painful. He's forcing entry. So that idea, even if he wouldn't be forcing entry, which we're going to ask in a moment, even if he wouldn't be forcing entry, any type of position for intercourse until she finally gets into place is considered to be painful. V'cheinu omer, v'tefashkiat ragleich l'chalover. So when the Navi wants to put down Klal Yisrael and talk about the way they go to bed with every passerby, any avodah zarah in the world they're ready to make love to. So what it says there, you go spread your legs for any passerby. That's always, people use that as a nasty way of referring to intercourse, go spread your legs for everybody. So, okay, so obviously that is part of what we view as, yeah, that's what you're willing to go through just to find people to have sex with you. Fine. But then if that's the case, as the Gemara, so then Yachi Mefutanami. So then why does the Mishnah say that a Mefuta doesn't get any tsar? She also has tsar, right? I understand that she has fun in the relationship, but I mean, what we're saying over here, if you're talking about over here getting into position, so she also has pain. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabba Baravua, look, I mean, you're talking about over here a woman who engaged in a consensual relationship, okay? So Lama Davar Dome, let's say somebody says to someone else, you like my shirt, you tear it up, okay? And I'm telling you, it'll be potter. So lemaisa, you're potter over there only in the event that the guy said al menat shiti pater. But Tosva says that the very fact that the relationship was consensual is the equivalent of saying al menat shiti pater. So that's why you don't pay. What are you talking about? It's not up to her. What do you mean, Shali? Tear my shirt. Let me tear my shirt. It's not my shirt. Her body, so to speak, or the income from her body belongs to her father. So it is not Shali. So how are you comparing it to that case at all? El Amar of Nachman, Amar Rabba Baravui. You know, when you speak to a woman who can really explain things to you and who is able to properly calibrate her words, not like you often find with women, oh, I had the most horrible experience. You didn't have the most horrible experience. You had something that was unpleasant today. So fine. So if you're talking to a woman who is a pikachat and is able to talk normally, then this is what they say, that the mifuta in latzar, it's not, there's no pain from getting into a position in a consensual relationship. What do you mean? There's no, I mean, we know there is pain in any type of intercourse. There's some kind of difficulty in getting into position. Omar Abaye, yeah, you know, it's like my mommy told me. You know, if a guy is bald, he may feel a little bit more pain in a hot shower than a guy who's got hair. Okay. That's the difference. Now, when you're going to sue, go ahead, go sue, go to court and say, oh my God, I went through hell. The shower was hot. But everybody else thought it was a great shower. Yeah, but they have hair on their head. So that's ridiculous. You can't sue for pain on something like that.
Scalper's price.
Very good. Very good. Rava said, Rav Chista's daughter was his wife. Told me, yeah, this pain. You know what kind of pain we're talking about? Kirivde de kusilta. It's like going for a blood test, okay? So it's a little pinprick, you know? Big deal. Go ahead and sue Kupat Cholim for your pain. And Rav Papa Omar, Omerli Bat Abasora, who was his wife, kinama kushi bechinachi. You know, it's like eating a piece of hard bread that rubs against your gums. Now you're going to go sue for the restaurant that gave you hard bread. I mean, come on. Let's keep things in a proper perspective. Okay. Now, the next difference that we had between an ones and a mefateh is that the ones is notain miyad, whereas the mefateh is notain likishiyotzi, only when he divorces her. Now, what is that supposed to mean? He never married her. What do you mean likishiyotzi? The point is, if he doesn't want to marry her, then he has to pay. So how did he send her away? Ishtogi? She's not even married. You're calling her sending her away? Omar Abaye, it doesn't mean when he sends her away. It means when it's determined that he's not going to be able to, it doesn't mean he sends her away with a get. It means when, for whatever reason, in Beis Din, either she or he or the father says that there ain't going to be no marriage. Okay, fine. So then, that's what the Mishnah is saying. That's when you pay. Tanya nami achi, afa pishamro mefateh noten kishalo yichnos. You see that's the meaning of it. The mefata pays when it's clear that there's not going to be a marriage. So at that point, either you're going to marry or you're going to pay in the case of a consensual relationship. But he does have to pay her boshet upagam immediately, because that has nothing to do with whether he is ready to marry her or not. That has to do with assault and battery, which will say, but it was consensual. I understand, but she didn't have the right to give consent. It was the father that had the right to give consent, and therefore, in terms of payment, it's not consensual. The echad ha'ones ve'echad ha'mifateh, in both cases, the girl can say, I don't want to marry this guy, and the father can say, I don't want him to marry my daughter. That's true. It's not only the guy who can refuse to. There's a bit of a problem here, as you understand. A father can marry her off ba'al kocha, right? So forget about the question of there being a relationship between her and him directly. But how is it possible for her to say that I refuse the marriage if the father could anyway be mekabel kedushin from him? Kiritso, no. But this is the question that Tosfos asks. I mean, it doesn't make any sense if the father is masking. So how in the world can she say no? So there's different approaches to this. I mean, one approach is that even though she can't stop the father from being mekabel kedushin from him, but she can be mechayev him that he pays, that he has to pay knas, because that's all that it's referring to in the pasuk. Or, of course, it could be talking about in a case where she became afterwards a bulgaret, or when she was a yisoma b'chaye avia. Okay. Whatever, but just keep that in mind, that the refusal does not mean that it takes away necessarily. There are some who say that it does, by the way, but it takes away the right of the father to accept because of the context of rape or the context of a pitoy, of a seduction, that actually does have the right to mamish refuse against the father. Okay, anyway, so now, where do we know this from? So Bishlama Mifuta, we know that you can refuse because it says Ima Ein Ima Ein Avia. Ainli Ella Avia, how do we know she herself can be Mima Enet? Tamud Lomarma Ein Yima Ein Mikomarkom. But how do we know in the case of an Ones, where over there it says that you're Mukhuyev to take her? So Ones, Bishlama Ihi, I understand. She can be for sure Ma'akev, because it says V'lo tihye means she makes herself available, the kedushin, to him. That's the lo tihye, le'isha. That means midata. But where do we know that a father can be ma'akiv if the Torah says he has to marry her? Where does it say that the father can say, I don't want him to marry her? Maybe that's a chiyav, the v'lo tihye le'isha. Omer Abaye, it's just reasonable. I mean, imagine a case where a guy has been dying to marry such and such girl. He's been talking to the father about it, and he refuses. I'd never give my daughter to a jerk like you. So he says, okay, I got a great idea. I'll rape her, and then he won't have any say in the matter. Ha-ha! And the Torah will say, I have to marry her. Teach him a lesson of being so hoity-toity. So therefore, it's a tougher pashut that shalot echote niskar. We don't want to give somebody a situation in which he can use rape as a way to get over the father's objections to his marriage. It just makes sense. Rava Amar, it's a kal v'chomer. It seems to me to be obvious. If a mifateh were, look over there, shelo avar, I mean, the only one that he went against. He didn't go against her. It was a consensual relationship. They've loved each other for years. What's the big deal if they go to bed together? The only one that he's violated is the father, and the father hasn't wanted him to be sleeping with his daughter. So fine, he went against the father. And over there, the din is that you said that bein hi ubein avia yecholin la'akev. So in a case of rape, where over there he violated both her rutzen and the father's rutzen. So lo kol shekein. That's obvious, no? So Rava didn't want to say the svara of Shaloye Chote Niska. Why? Because remember that he's going to have to pay a knas. So you can't call him Chote Niska. He's going to be paying through the nose. So therefore, what sense is a Chote Niska? Abaye lo amar kerava, and say that it's a kalvachomer, because he could say, listen, in the case of the mefateh, we're over there, the man himself who was the mefateh, he can say, I don't want to marry her. So over there, it makes sense to say that since iu matzi ma'akev, so the father can also say, well, he's going to be the only one that's going to decide. I'm going to decide, and I don't want him as a son-in-law. So avianami matzi ma'akev, but in a case where the Torah is mechayev the marriage, and the rapist can't refuse, maybe over there the Torah took it out of the hands of the father as well, because the Torah insists that this is the only appropriate result of taking someone forcibly to be forced to maintain that relationship. So maybe avia nami lo matzi ma'akev. There's another braita that says it like this. Afa pi shamru ones noten miyad, even though in the case of rape, you pay immediately the 50 shekel. But don't think that that means that you're going to have a separate payment for a ketuvah and for a knas. It's not true. Actually, the payment of the knas is the payment of the ketuvah. And therefore, because of the fact that the ones pays, if he's motzi'ah, then she does not have a right to get further ksuma. What do you mean? He's not allowed to be motzi'ah. I understand what you're saying. Kishiyotzi'ah. What kishiyotzi'ah? The Torah says, lo yochol lo tzako yomav, and you're saying kishiyotzi'ah? No, I mean, kishiyotzi'ah. If she insists that she wants to get rid of him, ein la alav klum, she cannot demand a ksuva after he already paid the knas, even though the knas went to the father. Now, continue. Can I get back to the price? Because you don't let me finish. What would be the din if he dies? So if he dies, the money that he's already paid for her knas is the payment of her ketuvah. Because that's what it says. Kimora bitulot. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, wait a minute. She's got to have some ketuvah. It's true that it takes away the ketuvah of the bitulah, but it doesn't take away the ketuvah of the bulah. So we give her a ketuvah of a mana the way we would have given to a bulah. So yesh la ketuvah mana. She's no different. So in other words, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with both of these things. Not only in the case of where he dies, if it ends with divorce because she demands a divorce, or it ends with death, either way, there is a mana. So what's the machlokas? The Rabbanan say, look, why did we make the ksuva in the first place? Kedei shalote kala be'inav lohotziah. We want to make it tough for him to divorce, right? So we made this takana. If he's going to divorce her, he's going to have to pay through the nose. And that way, women will not be hefker. The husbands can do whatever they want to do with their wives. But here, he doesn't have the legal right to divorce her. So what would be the point of giving her a ketuvah when there's no right to divorce her anyway? So we don't need to be metaken a ketuvah. Whereas Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Savar, yeah, that's all very nice, technically speaking. You know how miserable he can make her life? He can make her so miserable that she says, I want a divorce. So in that case, of course, he can give her a divorce. So we want to make sure that he does not take advantage of his power to make her miserable. That's the point. Because it's going to cost him money to make her miserable. So because of that, we would still give him a chiyuv to pay her at least a mana. And the other naf, now you'll notice, by the way, and here is one of the places that Tosis brings up this question of what in the world does this have to do with a ksuva at death? What, are we going to make it harder for him to die? because it's going to cost his estate money? What's the logic in the applying the ksuva? So there we have, as Tosis explains, as usual. Obviously, when we tell you what something is for, we're not giving you the full spectrum of the perspective that is machayev the takonas that we make. There may be hundreds of hidden issues that are really, many of them are expressed in the Tnaei HaKetuvah of all the other things that we are worried about. I mean, what about health insurance? You know, what about the support? All kinds of things, dozens of issues that need to be addressed in the Ketuvah. We're not talking about that. So there's another basic point, which is we've mentioned earlier. It's the point that's called Chen, which is perfect for Parshas Ve'eschanan. It's important for us to ensure that marriage is a, as they say in Yiddish, a bachenta exercise, that the thing is steeped in grace and decency and not in taking advantage in any way. And we want people to feel that they are attracted to the concept of marriage. It's all very nice to be attracted to human relationships, but that's physical. What we're trying to do is we're trying to create a completely different aura that provides the sense of kedushin precisely to physicality. You know, part of that is that a woman feels cared for. And feeling cared for means that she is cared for in the event that her husband is not going to take care of her. I want to know that what I'm entering into is something in which the care for me is primary. And that therefore it's not just when I am around to do what my husband wants to get out of me, but that rather this relationship is viewed as a permanent relationship in which even if my husband dies, he's going to see to it that I'm cared for after his death. That's called chen. Now, it may well be, as Tosfos says, that if it would be that the only thing that we had was chen, then we would never have been able to be misakin a ksuva for chen alone. Remember that we based the whole idea of the ksuva on the moar habetulot issue. But once we make that, remember that always there are two things. There's what we want to achieve with our takana, and there is the mechanism for making that takana. We always need to understand that those two things are not always necessarily the same, and they don't necessarily follow one from the other. We may not be able to feel that we have a mechanism for institution of the ksuva purely in terms of chen, because what the Torah provides the ksuva for, the equivalent of a ksuva of Mara Batulot, is not in death. So therefore, we basically add to the mechanism all of the issues that we want to take care of in the case of the ksuva. The next thing that we learned in the Mishnah was a third difference between an ones, ma'anes, and a mefate. Namely, the ones is shote ba'atzitzo. He has to keep her around. Armeli Rava miparzaki l'ravashi. Didn't we just go through a whole big thing about how we learn out the two parshas of ones and mefate, one from the other? It was the whole question of where we learn it out from, the machlokas. Do we learn it out from the words asher lo orasa? Or do we learn it out from the words kimoar abetulot? But everybody agrees it's a fundamental idea that these two parshios are viewed in tandem. So why don't we learn out one from the other? That the same way that the Torah demands of the rapist, that lo tiela isha, it demands of someone who takes advantage of a kid in a consensual relationship, also lo tiela isha. Why not? So Omar Kra, no. Because since it adds in the word lo, it says, Mahor Yimareno lo leisha. Why doesn't it just say Mahor Yimareno leisha? Because lo means always midato. It has to be a consensual marriage, not one that's forced upon him in the Torah. And the Mishnah explained, what do I mean when I say shotabatsitso? So it means that even if she is a mukashrin and she's blind or whatever, but if she is asura, then it doesn't mean it, because this is veloti elisha. Omer of Kahana, you know, I said to Rav Zvi Minarda, Shaila, that I had about this thing. I mean, if there's a mitzvah, a veloti elisha, So why isn't that mitzvah aseh docha the lotase, let's say, of sleeping with a mamzeres? Because the Torah wants you to keep this woman as your wife. So I should actually be mechuyev to take her, because neite aseh v'nitre lotase. And I'll tell you, says Rav Kahana, I'll tell you what Rav Zvid said to me when I expressed my trouble with this question. He said, Heicha amrina neite aseh v'dach nitre lotase. That's in cases where you have, let's say, a situation of mila b'tzaras. We have a classic case. You have an orla that has tzaras on it. If you're going to remove that orla, then in order to be mekayim the mitzvah of mila, then you're going to be over on the mitzvah of hishamer b'negah tzaras, which is an isur lav, right? So there's no way for me to do the mila without being over on that lav. That's where we have esedocha lotas. Masha Enkein over here. All that we need is for the woman to say, I don't like you. I will never marry you, you bum. And then all of a sudden the esed disappears, right? So then if she would have said that, im amra lo ba'ina, so would there be an aseh at all? So therefore, now Rashi says something very strange. Therefore, in such cases, we'll tell the woman to say, I don't want you, and that way we will avoid the eser lo taseh. Mashma, that it's really dependent on her saying it. Most Rishonim learn not like Rashi. And what it's saying is that there's a fundamental difference between the type of mitzvah where eser is docha lo taseh, where there's no other way to get by, than a mitzvah which may or may not obtain, depending on whether she would want it or not. We don't really need for her to say, I don't want you. It's just the possibility of saying, I don't want you. By the way, as Tosef reminds us here, which are things that we've spoken about in the sugyas of esedocha lo taseh as well, which we had recently in Masechet Yevamos. The problem with the mila b'tzaras deal is that there is an aseh and a lo taseh involved in the hishamer b'negat tzaras. And therefore, this is not a very good example. And when we're using it, we really mean it only in terms of the cheles b'tzitzis. But anyway, just keep it in mind, because remember, that was one heck of a sugya, the question of esedocha lo taseh with its involvement in the various different types of aseh and the various different types of lotaseh. Very complex sugya that Baruch Hashem we were zocha to learn together back in Yevamos. Anyway, now it's time to say goodbye.